This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Attorney General Andrew Bailey sent a letter demanding the country's leading companies abandon DEI practices today. Bailey is joined by 14 other states in, quote, fighting to protect working Americans and investors from these woke political trends and blatant racial discrimination, end quote. He threatened legal action if the DEI practices do not stop. He has already filed lawsuits against Starbucks and IBM.
Well, there you have a report from Hannah Falcon of KFVS 12 in Cape Girardeau talking about Missouri's Attorney General. We just happen to have him in studio with us right now. Andrew Bailey, thank you for being in here.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. I want to get to the DEI thing here in a second. So I want to talk about your fight here more locally on behalf of the people of Missouri. But there is a headline that has just come out here in the last minutes, probably within the last hour. Federal Judge James Boasberg, we've heard that name, finds probable cause to hold Trump in contempt over deportation flights. The 48-page opinion, Judge Boasberg said the court had ultimately determined that the Trump administration actions on the March 15th deportation flights, which took place after he issued a bench ruling ordering their immediate return to U.S. soil, demonstrate a, quote, willful disregard for the court that is sufficient for the government to be found in criminal contempt. Do you have any comments on this? Because this is breaking legal news.
Yeah, this is judicial lawfare. I mean, that's exactly what this is. We saw lawfare from state and local officials in Georgia and New York against then candidate Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We see it now from the bench in an Article 3 unelected federal judge, cultural elite who's taken the bench, who's doing judicial lawfare against the Trump administration. The judge never had authority to interfere in foreign policy, national security issues that are given to the executive branch under our constitutional structure. So when that judge usurped his Article 3 authority to invade the province of the executive branch of government, the judge behaved illegally. And so now he's saying that, well, you still have to do what I say or I'm going to hold you in criminal contempt. That's not how this system works. That judge should be impeached. At the end of the day, the executive and legislative branches of government have checks and balances against the judiciary as well. It's high time we use those checks and balances. The judiciary is not right because they're right. They're right because we've allowed them to be last, but we don't have to. Article 3 says that the federal judiciary adjudicates cases and controversies between parties, but only where there's that limited federal jurisdiction. The judge had none. He has no authority to issue this order.
Oh, so the way, you know, we understand that our lifetime appointments for a judge like this, he's very much so an activist in the way he's using the bench. The only way that the American people get to check, because we love checks and balances in this country, is through impeachment.
Yeah, that's right. And at the end of the day, that's up to the legislative branch of government. You know, the House could impeach the judge and then the Senate would hold a hearing. I think that's an appropriate step. I think that at the end of the day, we're not talking about a disagreement over the contours of settled law.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the usurpation of one branch of government against the other. Now, what if President Trump just said, I'm not going to follow the laws Congress passed? That would be called a constitutional crisis.
Right.
Well, that's what we're seeing here, but it's a constitutional crisis of the judiciary, of this judge's making. And you see, like, Chief Justice John Roberts of the United States Supreme Court saying, hey, look, we shouldn't impeach judges just because we disagree with them. This goes beyond a simple disagreement over, you know, a jump ball could go either
sure
way. The issue of first impression, like, this is settled law that's dictated by the United States Constitution. And you have a federal judge that's trying to make Americans less safe by interfering in foreign policy and national security directives from the executive branch.
Yeah, we've heard so much about, you said constitutional crisis. I almost don't even take that phrase seriously anymore, because just by virtue of the American people in a majority, all 7-for-7 swing states, just a landslide victory for him in November. Like they all, we were told by the left that it would be a constitutional crisis if Donald Trump got reelected. And it's always interesting to me to hear a political party in the Democrats always say that the only way to preserve democracy is if you only vote for their party. And I'm like, I don't think you understand what that word means.
And they're the same people that try to destroy our Democratic Republic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what you see this judge doing by saying, well, separation of powers doesn't matter. I also get to dictate foreign policy. I mean, would we allow a judge to set troop movements on a battlefield or select bombing targets in a time of war? No, we would not. Yeah. And yet that's exactly what this judge is trying to do.
So, you know, the left is working very hard to transform how we function. And they got the wheel for a while Joe Biden was the president. We had a lot of implementations across the country to really elevate where DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion was implemented, how it was implemented, but specifically how it was prioritized over all other things. And you have been a steady advocate for actual equality and not the inverse of it, which is what the left has been putting up. Talk to us about what you're doing right here in the state of Missouri.
I agree with the United States Supreme Court. The best way to end racial discrimination is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
Amen.
And corporate racism is still racism. Ever since 1964, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, Title VII prohibited discrimination on the basis of race or national origin in the workplace. The Missouri Human Rights Act, same thing. And so Missouri is uniquely positioned, given the authority of the state under the Missouri Human Rights Act, to take action. We certainly sent ample warnings to our corporate citizens to eliminate racially discriminatory practices that are hidden under this kind of social justice warrior mantra of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion programs. But at the end of the day, if you're enforcing racial quotas to elevate certain races above other races, you're depriving those other races of opportunities in the workplace. That's violative. That violates the Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It violates the Missouri Human Rights Act. What we're doing here with the Business Roundtable, this is a group of hundreds of CEOs that have met for the last 50, 60 years, and they issue kind of best corporate practices. And corporate governing principles. And so they published a new principle 4 or 5 years ago that said, hey, we're going to redefine the term corporate purpose. Well, corporate purpose is supposed to mean maximizing profits for shareholders.
Yeah.
That supports open, free, fair market economics. And yet in 2019, 2021, the Business Roundtable said, we're going to redefine corporate purpose to promote DEI instead. Well, that's a breach of their fiduciary duty to their shareholders. So it's illegal in that respect. Specifically, promoting racial quotas violates Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and the Missouri Human Rights Act. And it's immoral. How dare anyone tell African Americans they're not good enough to achieve? I mean, it's very patronizing to say you're not good enough. I'm going to promote you despite your lack of merit. And then you're going to be forever beholden to my largesse. Yeah. I mean, that's what corporate America is saying to the black community. I think it's morally abhorrent.
It's racist.
It's absolutely racist. It's corporate racism.
You are listening right now in studio to Attorney General Andrew Bailey, a fierce defender of our constitutional rights here in Missouri, but also across the country. You've had a lot of national implications on fights that you've chosen to really go all in on. I'm interested in, you know, DEI, and I've said this because I'm a fan. I'd love to take my family to Disney World, and I hate what Disney has become. I love what they were. Walt Disney, is one of the most patriotic Americans that we can highlight, and they've really turned everything upside down right now. And I feel like they're kind of starting to get the message, maybe. And that's because dollars speak, of course. But DEI in a company like Disney, but in many other companies as well, it was a marketing tool. Like, I'm not even sold that the company is implementing this idea of diversity and inclusion. They saw that it was trendy and they knew they could sell it to people.
Yeah.
And it didn't sell. Yeah. But what about these companies who are kind of renaming or repurposing, kind of sneakily trying to keep those policies in place, but do it back here behind the curtain?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is always racial quotas, discrimination in the workplace based on race has always been and will always be both morally abhorrent and illegal.
Yes.
And we're going to enforce the law against it in the state of Missouri. I think that what happened, you know, despite all the work in the civil rights movement, hey, look, Republicans have been fighting and dying for a meritocracy to give African Americans a fair chance since the 1860s. So this isn't new to our party.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we saw in the 1960s with the civil rights movement and legal protections to prevent this kind of discriminatory behavior. And then after the 1990s, when the affirmative action cases came down and the court kind of said, well, look, we're going to allow some racial gerrymandering in higher education. It's been a steady decline since then where folks have said, well, if we can do it here, we can do it there. We can do a little more. We can do a little more. But even in that context, even in the context of higher education, since the 1978 case, Regents of the University of California v. I think his last name is Bakke, they said racial quotas still violate the Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution. That's going to be interpreted in parallel with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so this has always been illegal. And so it doesn't matter. Look, the noble objective is still illegal. It's still illegal to discriminate on the basis of race. And like I don't know how to say it any better than the Supreme Court. The way you end racial discrimination is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
Yeah, that is a very well put conclusion. I think that Americans clearly have said that they agree with that. In the last election, they had the opportunity to weigh in on that. Another thing that Americans weighed in on in the last election is a lot of the gender confusion that exists as a cultural and, again, trendy thing to push as a priority over all else. You're fighting back against Planned Parenthood as well here in the state of Missouri. Talk to me about some of your successes there.
Scored an enormous win yesterday in court to force Planned Parenthood to turn over documents that we requested as part of our ongoing investigation into gender mutilation clinics operating across the state to hold wrongdoers accountable. Those clinics have resisted compliance with state statute since I initiated that investigation. And we're not done, and we're not going to give up. All three of those cases have been briefed and argued and or decided at the appellate court level. We're waiting on two decisions out of the Eastern District Court of Appeals. But yesterday was a huge win. And again, it just validates the state's authority to protect the health and safety of children. I said since I took office, I want Missouri to be the safest state in the nation for children. And that means ending the gender mutilation of kids that is a woke left-wing experimentation that permanently harms kids. It's not based in health or science. How dare anyone tell these kids God put them in the wrong body? We know he doesn't make mistakes. There are zero FDA approvals. Even under the Biden administration's FDA, zero FDA approvals for the administration of powerful chemicals like puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones or dangerous irreversible surgeries for kids under 18 for the treatment of what's called gender dysphoria. And the fact that there's no medicine or science behind it means it should and is banned in the state of Missouri. And we're going to look back in time and hold purveyors of this dangerous experimentation responsible for their actions. And again, the court has validated the state's role in protecting the health and safety of children in Missouri.
And, you know, we've seen studies that have been done where they've hidden studies away that show something that is politically disadvantageous to the people who want to push this type of, gender transformation in children specifically. Like, they have manipulated, you know, with the science. They've manipulated the science for a political purpose. It's evil.
Yeah. Anytime the left starts preaching science, radar should be going off, right? I mean, we saw that during COVID. There wasn't any science behind anything. Dr. Anthony Fauci. I mean, I can hear the quacking, you know, from over here. At the end of the day, there was no science behind this. And you're right. Think about what happened to Big Tobacco in the 1990s. When they knew the cigarettes caused cancer and hid that science from the public and resisted government regulation. And then there were enormous lawsuits that have forever changed the tobacco industry and honestly really reduced the amount of smoking in the United States of America. You know, I think history is going to look back at this moment in time. Let me give you an even better example. Think about the 1940s at the tail end of the eugenics movement, where the leading psychiatry of the day said that lobotomies were the best way to treat mental health disorders. They went in and cut out your brain. That's mutilation of the human body. And it didn't fix anything. It made people worse off. I think that history is going to look back at the moment in time, the height of that transgender movement, and see it as a dark, shameful period in our history where we were harming children. And you know, thankfully, here in Missouri, we put a stop to it.
Amen to that. We're speaking with Attorney General Andrew Bailey. One last question before we let you go. Just interested in your thoughts on, read the Fox News headline here. Trump administration refers New York Attorney General Letitia James for possible prosecution over allegations of mortgage fraud. I don't know how much you've been able to look into this, but you are an attorney general here in Missouri. Yeah. She has that same position in New York. What are your thoughts?
I think that the allegations are not just words. there's documentary evidence that were attached to the letter that that the independent counsel official sent to DOJ as part of that referral. And those are documents showing that Letitia James was getting loans for a house that she called her primary residence in Norfolk, Virginia. So one of two things happened here.
Primary house.
Either either she's not legally capable of legally qualified to be the New York Attorney General, which the rest of the world will be better off if
Shocker.
That's true, or she committed a fraud and, you know, authenticating a false writing, committing doing a forgery of a writing here in the state of Missouri is a felony offense. It's also disqualifying. She's supposed to be protecting people from fraud, and it appears she was perpetrating. And these aren't, again, this is not a contortion of the law. We have the document now with her name affixed to it. So this is a real problem for her. And, you know, I think the chickens are coming home to roost.
What's the stronger case, Letitia James' case against Donald Trump or the Trump DOJ's case against Letitia James?
The DOJ case against Letitia James, there was no case against President Trump. Again, what she pointed to is fraud. Everyone made money. The banks that she say he defrauded, everyone made money. There was no victim. Nobody complained. And there was no falsehood in the writing. Here, again, she either...
Sounds like Letitia James made money.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, she forged a document for pecuniary gain. That's the definition of fraud.
It's just like too funny. It's too ironic.
Dripping with irony.
I don't know if you're not allowed to laugh at that, but I'm thinking that is funny stuff.
I've seen the news story. I didn't realize how much those things paralleled until you just said that.
Oh,
the tax issues.
Maybe now we understand why she knew so much about the fraud she was trying to tack on Donald Trump.
I mean, but it's
she's good at it.
My position is she had to contort the law to try to fit the facts that President Trump. Because if you look at the banking entries or the documents that he submitted as part of his business transactions, they weren't fraudulent. And no one was misled because everyone benefited.
My question with the Trump case has always been, if you told Trump you'd pay him $1 billion to commit the same crime again, would he even know how to do it?
Would he even know how to replicate
the crime that he was being charged with? Real quick before we let you go, do you think there's a natural conclusion to the case against, you know, Donald Trump's a felon now? What's going to happen there?
I think at the end of the day, the court has to vacate that conviction. Legally, he can't. Legally, those facts don't constitute criminal behavior.
How long does that take?
Years. I mean, the appellate process, criminal conviction, you can take 18, 24 months at the Court of Appeals. If he wins, theoretically, that's over. Could be transferred to the highest court in New York. And I'm sorry, I forget what the name of those courts are, but you'd have an intermediate appellate review. Theoretically, you've got an independent intermediate appellate review and then the highest court, a state Supreme Court.
So could he be cleared, like, I don't know, right before the next election?
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
If this were a movie, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Attorney General Andrew Bailey, you are fighting for common sense. And unfortunately, we need to fight very hard to get common sense back in. But we are very fortunate to have you here in the state of Missouri doing the job.
Hey, God bless. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much. Andrew Bailey here in studio on the Annie Fry Show. All right. Quick break. And then Ryan Wiggins tries to elevate the show from here. Everybody watch and see if he's capable. How do you feel? You feel good about that?
No.
Well, you got to stick around.
Look, the Attorney General's standing right next to me.
Maybe,
what am I going to say? Yeah, I'll outdo him.
Maybe if you stand in the microphone he was on, maybe it'll just rub off on you a little bit. All right. Wiggins America next. Don't go away. We keep on.